been put off. Give your spouse a love note accompanied by the act of service every 3 days for a month. Number 3. Ask your spouse to make a list of 10 things he or she would like for you to do during the next month. Then ask your spouse to prioritize these by numbering them 1 through 10, with 1 being the most important and 10 being the least important. Use this list to plan your strategy for a month of love. Get ready to live with a happy spouse. Number 4. While your spouse is away, get the children to help you with some act of service for him. When he walks in the door, join the children in shouting, "Surprise! We love you!" Then share your act of service. Number 5. What one act of service has your spouse nagged about consistently? Why not decide to see the nag as a tag? Your spouse is tagging this as really important to him or her. If you choose to do it as an expression of love, it is worth more than 1,000 roses. Number 6. If your requests to your mate come across as nags or put-downs, try writing them in words that would be less offensive to them. Share this revised wording with your spouse. For example, "The yard always looks so nice, and I really appreciate your work. I'd love to thank you in advance for mowing the lawn this week before Julie and Ben come over for dinner." Your husband might even respond, "Where's the lawnmower? I can't wait." Try it and see. Number 7. Perform a major act of service, like organizing the home office, and then post a sign that reads, "To your spouse's name with love," and sign your name. Number 8. If you have more money than time, hire someone to do the acts of service that you know your spouse would like for you to do, such as the yard work or a once-a-month deep cleaning of your home. Number 9. Ask your spouse to tell you the daily acts of service that would really speak love to him or her. Seek to work these into your daily schedule. Little things really do mean a lot. Chapter 8, Love Language Number 5. Physical touch. We have long known that physical touch is a way of communicating emotional love. Numerous research projects in the area of child development have reached that conclusion. Babies who are held, hugged, and kissed develop a healthier emotional life than those who are left for long periods of time without physical contact. Physical touch is also a powerful vehicle for communicating marital love. Holding hands, kissing, embracing, and sexual intercourse are all ways of communicating emotional love to one spouse. For some individuals, physical touch is their primary love language. Without it, they feel unloved. With it, their emotional tank is filled, and they feel secure in the love of their spouse. The power of touch. Of the 5 senses, touching, unlike the other 4, is not limited to one localized area of the body. Tiny tactile receptors are located throughout the body. When those receptors are touched or pressed, nerves carry impulses to the brain. The brain interprets these impulses, and we perceive that the thing that touched us is warm or cold, hard or soft. It causes pain or pleasure. We may also interpret it as loving or hostile. Some parts of the body are more sensitive than others. The difference is due to the fact that the tiny tactile receptors are not scattered evenly over the body, but arranged in clusters. Thus, the tip of the tongue is highly sensitive to touch, whereas the back of the shoulders is the least sensitive. The tips of the fingertips and the tip of the nose are other extremely sensitive areas. Our purpose, however, is not to understand the neurological basis of the sense of touch, but rather its psychological importance. Physical touch can make or break a relationship. It can communicate hate or love. To the person whose primary love language is physical touch, the message will be far louder than the words, "I hate you," or "I love you." A slap in the face is detrimental to any child, but it is devastating to a child whose primary love language is touch. A tender hug communicates love to any child, but it shouts love to the child whose primary love language is physical touch. The same is true of adults. In marriage, the touch of love may take many forms. Since touch receptors are located throughout the body, Lovingly touching your spouse almost anywhere can be an expression of love. That does not mean that all touches are created equal. Some will bring more pleasure to your spouse than others. Your best instructor is your spouse, of course. After all, she is the one you are seeking to love. She knows best what she perceives as a loving touch. Don't insist on touching her in your way and in your time. Learn to speak her love dialect. Your spouse may find some touches uncomfortable or irritating. To insist on continuing those touches is to communicate the opposite of love. It is saying that you are not sensitive to her needs and that you care little about her perceptions of what is pleasant. Don't make the mistake of believing that the touch that brings pleasure to you will also bring pleasure to her. Love touches may be explicit and demand your full attention, such as in a back rub or sexual foreplay, culminating in intercourse. On the other hand, love touches may be implicit and require only a moment, such as putting your hand on his shoulder as you pour a cup of coffee, or rubbing your body against him as you pass in the kitchen. Explicit love touches obviously take more time, not only in actual touching, but in developing your understanding of how to communicate love to your spouse this way. If a back massage communicates love loudly to your spouse, then the time, money, and energy you spend in learning to be a good masseur or masseuse will be well invested. If sexual intercourse is your mate's primary dialect, reading about and discussing the art of sexual lovemaking will enhance your expression of love. Implicit love touches require little time but much thought, especially if physical touch is not your primary love language and if you did not grow up in a touching family. Sitting close to each other as you watch your favorite television program requires no additional time but may communicate your love loudly. Touching your spouse as you walk through the room where he is sitting takes only a moment. Touching each other when you leave the house and again when you return may involve only a brief kiss or hug, but will speak volumes to your spouse. Once you discover that physical touch is the primary love language of your spouse, you are limited only by your imagination on ways to express love. Coming up with new ways and places to touch can be an exciting challenge. If you have not been an under-the-table toucher, you might find that it will add a spark to your dining out. If you are not accustomed to holding hands in public, you may find that you can fill your spouse's emotional love tank as you stroll through the parking lot. If you don't normally kiss as soon as you get in the car together, you may find that it will greatly enhance your travels. Hugging your spouse before she goes shopping may not only express love, it may bring her home sooner. Try new touches in new places and let your spouse give you feedback on whether he finds it pleasurable or not. Remember, he has the final word. You are learning to speak his language. The body is for touching. Whatever there is of me resides in my body. To touch my body is to touch me. To withdraw from my body is to distance yourself from me emotionally. In our society, shaking hands is a way of communicating openness and social closeness to another individual. When, on rare occasions, one man refuses to shake hands with another, it communicates a message that things are not right in their relationship. All societies have some form of physical touching as a means of social greeting. The average American male may not feel comfortable with a European bear hug and kiss, but in Europe, that serves the same function as our shaking hands. There are appropriate and inappropriate ways to touch members of the opposite sex in every society. The recent attention to sexual harassment has highlighted the inappropriate ways. Within marriage, however, what is appropriate and inappropriate touching is determined by the couple themselves within certain broad guidelines. Physical abuse is, of course, deemed inappropriate by society, and social organizations have been formed to help the battered wife and the battered husband. Clearly, our bodies are for touching, but not for abuse. This age is characterized as the age of sexual openness and freedom. With that freedom, we have demonstrated that the open marriage, where both spouses are free to have sexual intimacies with other individuals, is fanciful. Those who do not object on moral grounds eventually object on emotional grounds. Something about our need for intimacy and love does not allow us to give our spouse such freedom. The emotional pain is deep and intimacy evaporates when we are aware that our spouse is involved with someone else sexually. Counselors' files are filled with records of husbands and wives who are trying to grapple with the emotional trauma of an unfaithful spouse. That trauma, however, is compounded for the individual whose primary love language is physical touch. That for which he longs so deeply, love expressed by physical touch, is now being given to another. His emotional love tank is not only empty, it has been riddled by an explosion. It will take massive repairs for those emotional needs to be met. Crisis and physical touch. Almost instinctively, in a time of crisis, we hug one another. Why? Because physical touch is a powerful communicator of love. In a time of crisis, more than anything, we need to feel loved. We cannot always change events, but we can survive if we feel loved. All marriages will experience crises. The death of parents is inevitable. Automobile accidents cripple and kill thousands each year. Disease is no respecter of persons. Disappointments are a part of life. The most important thing you can do for your mate in a time of crisis is to love him or her. If your spouse's primary love language is physical touch, nothing is more important than holding her as she cries. Your words may mean little, but your physical touch will communicate that you care. Crises provide a unique opportunity for expressing love. Your tender touches will be remembered long after the crisis has passed. Your failure to touch may never be forgotten. Marriage is not supposed to be this way. Since my first visit to West Palm Beach, Florida many years ago, I've always welcomed invitations to lead marriage seminars in that area. It was on one such occasion that I met Pete and Patsy. They were not native to Florida, few are, but they had lived there for 20 years and call West Palm Beach home. My seminar was sponsored by a local church, and as we drove from the airport, the pastor informed me that Pete and Patsy had requested that I spend the night at their house. I tried to act excited, but knew from experience that such a request usually meant a late-night counseling session. As the pastor and I entered the spacious, well-decorated Spanish-style house, I was introduced to Patsy and to Charlie, the family cat. As I looked around the house, I had the hunch that Pete's business had done very well, or his father had left him a huge inheritance, or he was hopelessly in debt. Later, I discovered that my first hunch was correct. When I was shown the guest room, I observed that Charlie the cat was making himself at home, stretched across the bed where I was to be sleeping. I thought, this cat has it made. Pete came home shortly, and we had a delightful snack together and agreed that we would have dinner after the seminar. Several hours later, while sharing dinner, I kept waiting for the counseling session to begin. It never did. Instead, I found Pat and Patsy to be a healthy, happily married couple. For a counselor, that is an oddity. I was eager to discover their secret, but being extremely tired and knowing that Pete and Patsy were going to drive me to the airport the next day, I decided to do my probing when I was feeling more alert. I had the opportunity as we were driving to the airport 45 minutes away. Pete and Patsy began to tell me their story. In the early years of their marriage, they had tremendous difficulties. They had grown up in the same community, attended the same church, and graduated from the same high school. Their parents had similar lifestyles and values. Pete and Patsy enjoyed many of the same things. They both liked tennis and boating, and they often talked about how many interests they held in common. They seemed to possess all the commonalities that are supposed to assure fewer conflicts in marriage. They began dating in their senior year in high school. They attended separate colleges but saw each other frequently and were married 3 weeks after he received his degree in business and she a degree in sociology. 2 months later, they moved to Florida, where Pete had been offered a good job. They were 2,000 miles from their nearest relative. They could enjoy a honeymoon forever. The first 3 months were exciting, moving, finding a new apartment, enjoying life together. They were about 6 months into the marriage when Patsy began to feel that Pete was withdrawing from her. He was working longer hours, and when he was at home, he spent considerable time with the computer. When she finally expressed her feelings that he was avoiding her, Pete told her that he was not avoiding her, but simply trying to stay on top of his job. He said that she didn't understand the pressure he was under and how important it was that he do well in his first year on the job. Patsy wasn't pleased, but she decided to give him space. Patsy began to develop friendships with other wives who lived in the apartment complex. Often, when she knew Pat was going to work late, she would go shopping with one of her friends instead of going straight home after work. Sometimes, she was not at home when Pete arrived. That annoyed him greatly, and he accused her of being thoughtless and irresponsible. Patsy retorted, "Who is irresponsible? You don't even call me and let me know when you will be home. How can I be here for you when I don't even know when you will be here? And when you are here, you spend all your time on that dumb computer. You don't need a wife. All you need is a computer." To which Pete loudly responded, "I do need a wife. Don't you understand? That's the whole point. I do need a wife." But Patsy did not understand. She was extremely confused. In her search for answers, she went to the public library and checked out several books on marriage. "Marriage is not supposed to be this way," she reasoned. "I have to find an answer to our situation." When Pete went to the computer room, Patsy would pick up her book. In fact, on many evenings, she read until midnight. On his way to bed, Pete would notice her and make sarcastic comments such as, "If you read that much in college, you would have made straight A's." Patsy would respond, "I'm not in college, I'm in marriage, and right now, I'd be satisfied with a C." Pete went to bed without so much as a second glance. At the end of the first year, Patsy was desperate. She had mentioned it before, but this time she calmly said to Pete, "I am going to find a marriage counselor. Do you want to go with me?" But Pete answered, "I don't need a marriage counselor. I don't have time to go to a marriage counselor. I can't afford a marriage counselor." "Then I'll go alone," said Patsy. "Fine, you're the one who needs counseling anyway." The conversation was over. Patsy felt totally alone. But the next week, she made an appointment with a marriage counselor. After three sessions, the counselor called Pete and asked if he would be willing to come in to talk about his perspective on their marriage. Pete agreed, and the process of healing began. 6 months later, they left the counselor's office with a new marriage. I said to Pete and Patsy, "What did you learn in counseling that turned your marriage around?" "In essence," Dr. Chapman, Pete said, "we learned to speak each other's love language." The counselor did not use that term, but as you gave the lecture today, the lights came on. My mind raced back to our counseling experience, and I realized that's exactly what happened to us. We finally learned to speak each other's love language. "So what is your love language, Pete?" I asked. "Physical touch," he said without hesitation. "Physical touch for sure," said Patsy. "And yours, Patsy?" "Quality time, Dr. Chapman. That's what I was crying for in those days while he was spending all his time with his job and his computer." "How did you learn that physical touch was Pete's love language?" "It took a while," Patsy said. "Little by little, it began to come out in counseling. At first, I don't think Pete even realized it." "She's right," Pete said. "I was so insecure in my own sense of self-worth that it took forever for me to be willing to identify and acknowledge that her lack of touch had caused me to withdraw. I never told her that I wanted to be touched, although I was crying inside for her to reach out and touch me. In our dating relationship, I had always taken the initiative in hugging, kissing, and holding hands, but she had always been responsive. I felt that she loved me, but after we got married, there were times that I reached out to her physically, and she was not responsive. Maybe with her new job responsibilities, she was too tired. I don't know, but I took it personally. I felt that she didn't find me attractive. Then I decided I would not take the initiative because I didn't want to be rejected. So I waited to see how long it would be before she initiated a kiss or a touch or sexual intercourse. Once I waited for 6 weeks before she touched me at all, I found it unbearable. My withdrawal was to stay away from the pain I felt when I was with her. I felt rejected, unwanted, and unloved. Then Patsy said, "I had no idea that was what he was feeling. I knew that he was not reaching out to me. We were not kissing and hugging as we had done earlier, but I just assumed that since we were married, that was not as important to him now. I knew that he was under pressure with his job. I had no idea that he wanted me to take the initiative. I would go weeks without touching him. It didn't cross my mind. I was preparing meals, keeping the house clean, doing the laundry, and trying to stay out of his way. I honestly didn't know what else I could be doing. I could not understand his withdrawal or his lack of attention to me. It's not that I dislike touching. It's just that it was never that important to me. Spending time with me is what made me feel loved and appreciated, giving me attention. It really didn't matter whether he hugged or kissed. As long as he gave me attention, I felt loved. It took us a long time to discover the root of the problem, but once we discovered that we were not meeting each other's emotional need for love, we began to turn things around. Once I began to take the initiative in giving him physical touch, it's amazing what happened. His personality, his spirit, changed drastically. I had a new husband. Once he became convinced that I really did love him, then he began to become more responsive to my needs. What amazed me at the seminar today, Pete added, was the way your lecture on love languages carried me back all those years to that experience. You said in 20 minutes what it took us 6 months to learn. Well, it's not how fast you learn, but it is how well you learn it that matters. And obviously, you have learned it well. Pete is only one of many individuals for whom physical touch is the primary love language. Emotionally, they yearn for their spouse to reach out and touch them physically. Running the hand through the hair, giving a back rub, holding hands, embracing, sexual intercourse, all of those and other love touches are the emotional lifeline for the person for whom physical touch is the primary love language. Your turn. Recall some non-sexual touching times that enhanced intimacy between the two of you. What made these times special? If your spouse's love language is physical touch, let me give you some suggestions. Number one, as you walk from the car to go shopping, reach out and hold your spouse's hand. Number two, while eating together, let your knee or foot drift over and touch your spouse. Number three, walk up to your spouse and say, "Have I told you lately that I love you?" Take her in your arms and hug her while you rub her back and continue, "You are the greatest." Resist the temptation to rush to the bedroom. Untangle yourself and move on to the next thing. Number four, while your spouse is seated, walk up behind her and give her a shoulder massage. Number five, when you sit together in church, when the minister calls for prayer, reach over and hold your spouse's hand. Number six, initiate sex by giving your spouse a foot massage. Continue to other parts of the body as long as it brings pleasure to your spouse. Number seven, when family or friends are visiting, touch your spouse in their presence. Putting your arm around him as you stand talking, or simply placing your hand on her shoulder says, "Even with all these people in the house, I still see you." Number eight, when your spouse arrives at home, meet him or her one step earlier than usual and give your mate a big welcome home. The point is to vary the routine and enhance even a small touching experience. Chapter 9, Discovering Your Primary Love Language. Discovering the primary love language of your spouse is essential if you are to keep their emotional love tank full. But first, let's make sure you know your own love language. Having heard the five emotional love languages, words of affirmation, quality time, receiving gifts, acts of service, and physical touch, some individuals will know instantaneously their own primary love language and that of their spouse. For others, it will not be that easy. Some are like Marcus, who after hearing the five emotional love languages said to me, "I don't know. It seems that two of those are just about equal for me." "Which two?" I inquired. "Physical touch and words of affirmation," he responded. "By physical touch, what do you mean?" "Well, mainly sex," Marcus replied. I probed a little further, asking, "Do you enjoy your wife running her hands through your hair, or giving you a back rub, or holding hands, or kissing and hugging you at times when you are not having sexual intercourse?" "Well, those things are fine," said Marcus. "I'm not going to turn them down, but the main thing is sexual intercourse." That's when I know that she really loves me. Leaving the subject of physical touch for a moment, I turn to affirming words and ask, "When you say that words of affirmation are also important, what kind of statements do you find most helpful?" "Almost anything if it's positive," Marcus replied. "When she tells me how good I look, how smart I am, what a hard worker I am, when she expresses appreciation for the things I do around the house, when she makes positive comments about my taking time with the children, when she tells me she loves me, all of those things really mean a lot to me." Did you receive those kind of comments from your parents when you were growing up? Not very often, he said. Most of what I got from my parents were critical or demanding words. I guess that's why I appreciated Alicia so much in the first place, because she gave me words of affirmation. Let me ask you this. If Alicia were meeting your sexual needs, that is, if you were having quality sexual intercourse as often as you desire, but she was giving you negative words, making critical remarks, sometimes putting you down in front of others, do you think you would feel loved by her? I don't think so, he replied. I think I would feel betrayed and deeply hurt. I think I would be depressed. Marcus, I said, I think we have just discovered that your primary love language is words of affirmation. Sexual intercourse is extremely important to you and to your sense of intimacy with Alicia, but her words of affirmation are more important to you emotionally. If she were, in fact, verbally critical of you all the time and put you down in front of other people, the time may come when you would no longer desire to have sexual intercourse with her because she would be a source of deep pain to you. Marcus had made the mistake common to many men, assuming that physical touch is their primary love language because they desire sexual intercourse so intensely. For the male, sexual desire is physically based. That is, the desire for sexual intercourse is stimulated by the buildup of sperm cells and seminal fluid in the seminal vesicles. When the seminal vesicles are full, there's a physical push for release. Thus, the male's desire for sexual intercourse has a physical root. For the female, sexual desire is far more influenced by her emotions. If she feels loved and admired and appreciated by her husband, then she has a desire to be physically intimate with him. But without the emotional closeness, she may have little physical desire. Her biological sexual drive is closely tied to her emotional need for love. Because the male is physically pushed to have sexual release on a somewhat regular basis, he may automatically assume that that is his primary love language. But if he does not enjoy physical touch at other times and in non-sexual ways, it may not be his love language at all. Sexual desire is quite different from his emotional need to feel loved. That doesn't mean that sexual intercourse is unimportant to him. It is extremely important. But sexual intercourse alone will not meet his need to feel loved. His wife must speak his primary emotional love language as well. When, in fact, his wife speaks his primary love language and his emotional love tank is full, and he speaks her primary love language and her emotional tank is full, the sexual part of their relationship will take care of itself. Most sexual problems in marriage have little to do with physical technique, but everything to do with meeting emotional needs. After further conversation and reflection, Marcus said, "You know, I think you're right. Words of affirmation is definitely my primary love language. When she has been cutting and critical of me verbally, I tend to withdraw from her sexually and fantasize about other women. But when she tells me how much she appreciates me and admires me, my natural sexual desires are turned toward her." Marcus had made a significant discovery in our brief conversation. How do you know? What is your primary love language? What makes you feel most loved by your spouse? What do you desire above all else? If the answer to those questions does not leap to your mind immediately, perhaps it will help to look at the negative use of love languages. What does your spouse do or say, or fail to do or say, that hurts you deeply? If, for example, your deepest pain is the critical, judgmental words of your spouse, then perhaps your love language is words of affirmation. If your primary love language is used negatively by your spouse, that is, he does the opposite, it will hurt you more deeply than it would hurt someone else, because not only is he neglecting to speak your primary love language, he is actually using that language as a knife to your heart. I remember Mary in Kitchener, Ontario, who said, "Dr. Chapman, what hurts me most is that Ron never lifts a hand to help me around the house. He watches television while I do all the work. I don't understand how he could do that if he really loved me." Mary's deepest hurt, mainly that Ron did not help her do things around the house, was the clue to her primary love language, acts of service. If it grieves you deeply that your spouse seldom gives you a gift for any occasion, then perhaps your primary love language is receiving gifts. If your deepest hurt is that your spouse seldom gives you quality time, then that is your primary love language. Another approach to discovering your primary love language is to look back over your marriage and ask, "What have I most often requested of my spouse? Whatever you have most requested is probably in keeping with your primary love language. Those requests have probably been interpreted by your spouse as nagging. They have been, in fact, your efforts to secure emotional love from your spouse. Elizabeth, who lived in Marysville, Indiana, used that approach in discovering her primary love language. She said to me at the conclusion of a seminar session, "Whenever I look back over the last 10 years of my marriage and ask myself, what have I most often requested of Peter? My love language becomes obvious. I have requested quality time most often. Over and over again, I have asked him if we could go on a picnic, take a weekend together away, shut the TV off for just an hour and talk with each other, take a walk together, and on and on. I have felt neglected and unloved because seldom did he ever respond to my request. He gave me nice gifts for my birthday and special occasions and wondered why I was not excited about them." During your seminar, she continued, the lights came on for both of us. During the break, my husband apologized for being so dense through the years and so resistant to my request. He has promised me that things will be different in the future, and I believe they will. Another way to discover your primary love language is to examine what you do or say to express love to your spouse. Chances are, what you are doing for her is what you wish she would do for you. If you are constantly doing acts of service for your spouse, perhaps, although not always, that is your love language. If words of affirmation speak love to you, chances are you will use them in speaking love to your spouse. Thus, you may discover your own love language by asking, how do I consciously express my love to my spouse? But remember, that approach is only a possible clue to your love language. It is not an absolute indicator. For example, the husband who learned from his father to express love to his wife by giving her nice gifts expresses his love to his wife by doing what his father did. Yet, receiving gifts is not his primary love language. He is simply doing what he was trained to do by his father. I have suggested 3 ways to discover your own primary love language. Number 1, what does your spouse do or fail to do that hurts you most deeply? The opposite of what hurts you most is probably your love language. Number 2, what have you most often requested of your spouse? The thing you have most often requested is likely the thing that would make you feel most loved. Number 3, in what way do you regularly express love to your spouse? Your method of expressing love may be an indication that that would also make you feel loved. Using those 3 approaches will probably enable you to determine your primary love language. If 2 languages seem to be equal for you, that is, both speak loudly to you, then perhaps you are bilingual. If so, you make it easier on your spouse. Now, he or she has 2 choices, either of which will strongly communicate love to you. You may also wish to take the 5 love languages profile, which is attached as a PDF with this audiobook. Discuss the results with your spouse. 2 kinds of people may have difficulty discovering their primary love language. The first is the individual whose emotional love tank has been full for a long time. Her spouse has expressed love in many ways, and she is not certain which of those ways makes her feel most loved. She simply knows that she is loved. The second is the individual whose love tank has been empty for so long that he doesn't remember what makes him feel loved. In either case, go back to the experience of falling in love and ask yourself, what did I like about my spouse in those days? What did he do or say that made me desire to be with him? If you can conjure up those memories, it will give you some idea of your primary love language. Another approach would be to ask yourself, what would be an ideal spouse to me? If I could have the perfect mate, what would he or she be like? Your picture of a perfect mate should give you some idea of your primary love language. Having said all of that, let me suggest that you spend some time writing down what you think is your primary love language. Then, list the other 4 in order of importance. Also, write down what you think is the primary love language of your spouse. You may also list the other 4 in order of importance if you wish. Sit down with your spouse and discuss what you guessed to be his or her primary love language. Then, tell each other what you consider to be your own primary love language. Once you've shared that information, I suggest that you play the following game 3 times a week for 3 weeks. The game is called Tank Check. And it is played like this. When you come home, one of you says to the other, on a scale of 0 to 10, how is your love tank tonight? 0 means empty, 10 means I am full of love and can't handle any more. You give a reading on your emotional love tank, 10, 9, 8, 7, 6, 5, 4, 3, 2, 1, or 0, indicating how full it is. Your spouse says, what could I do to help fill it? Then you make a suggestion, something you would like your spouse to do or say that evening. To the best of his ability, he will respond to your request. Then you ask your spouse the same questions in the reverse order, so that both of you have the opportunity to do a reading on your love tank and to make a suggestion toward filling it. If you play the game for 3 weeks, you will be hooked on it, and it can be a playful way of stimulating love expressions in your marriage. One husband said to me, I don't like that love tank game. I played it with my wife. I came home and said to her, on a scale of 0 to 10, how's your love tank tonight? She said, about 7. I asked, what could I do to help fill it? And she said, the greatest thing you could do for me tonight is to do the laundry. I said, love and laundry? I don't get it. I said, that's the problem. Perhaps you don't understand your wife's love language. What's your primary love language? Without hesitation, he said, physical touch, and especially the sexual part of the marriage. Listen to me carefully, I said. The love you feel when your wife expresses love by physical touch is the same love your wife feels when you do the laundry. Bring on the laundry, he shouted. I'll wash the clothes every night if it makes her feel that good. Incidentally, if you have still not discovered your primary love language, keep records on the tank check game. When your spouse says, what could I do to help fill your tank? Your suggestions will likely cluster around your primary love language. You may request things from all 5 languages, but you will have more requests centering on your primary love language. Perhaps some of you are saying in your minds what one couple said to me in Zion, Illinois. Dr. Chapman, all that sounds fine and wonderful, but what if the love language of your spouse is something that just doesn't come naturally for you? I'll discuss my answer in Chapter 10. Your turn. Do you think by now you have a good sense of what your spouse's love language is? How about them for you? What more could you do to explore this? If your love tank is completely empty or very full, whether you know your love language or not, play the tank check game over the next month. Ask for a reading from 0 to 10 3 evenings a week, and then take the suggestions of your spouse to raise that number for him or her. If your spouse is at a 10, consistently, you can pat yourself on the back, but don't stop loving. Chapter 10. Love is a choice. How can we speak each other's love language when we are full of hurt, anger, and resentment over past failures? The answer to that question lies in the essential nature of our humanity. We are creatures of choice. That means that we have the capacity to make poor choices, which all of us have done. We have spoken critical words. We have done hurtful things. We are not proud of those choices, although they may have seemed justified at the moment. Poor choices in the past don't mean that you must make them in the future. Instead, we can say, I'm sorry. I know I have hurt you, but I would like to make the future different. I would like to love you in your language. I would like to meet your needs. I've seen marriages rescued from the brink of divorce when couples make the choice to love. Love doesn't erase the past, but it makes the future different. When we choose active expressions of love in the primary love language of our spouse, we create an emotional climate where we can deal with our past conflicts and failures. I just don't love her anymore. Brent was in my office, stone-faced and seemingly unfeeling. He had come not by his own initiative, but at my request. A week earlier, his wife Becky had been sitting in the same chair, weeping. Between her outbursts of tears, she managed to verbalize that Brent had told her that he no longer loved her and that he was leaving. She was devastated. When she regained her composure, she said, "We have both worked so hard the last 2 or 3 years. I knew that we were not spending as much time together as we used to, but I thought we were working for a common goal. I cannot believe what he is saying. He has always been such a kind and caring person. He is such a good father to our children." She continued, "How could he do this to us?" I listened as she described their 12 years of marriage. It was a story I'd heard many times before. They had an exciting courtship, got married at the height of the in-love experience, had the typical adjustments in the early days of marriage, and pursued the American dream. In due time, they came down off the emotional high of the in-love experience, but did not learn to speak each other's love language sufficiently. She had lived with a love tank only half full for the last several years, but she had received enough expressions of love to make her think that everything was okay. However, his love tank was empty. I told Becky that I would see if Brent would talk with me. I told Brent on the phone, as you know, Becky came to see me and told me about her struggle with what is happening in the marriage. I want to help her, but in order to do so, I need to know what you're thinking. He agreed readily, and now he sat in my office. His outward appearance was in stark contrast to Becky's. She had been weeping copiously, but he was stoic. I had the impression, however, that his tears had been shed weeks or perhaps months before, and that it had been an inward weeping. The story Brent told confirmed my hunch. "I just don't love her anymore," he said. "I haven't loved her for a long time,